Inside the Birds is back. What's up, everybody? It's Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan, Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5. The Fanatic, Tyler Zuli in the window tonight, as he has been with us for most of the year. 6 o'clock hour is brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com. South Jersey's diamond destination. Adam, man, we got a lot to talk about. And I'm feeling for the city right now. Because, you know, I always talk about the whole 24-hour of you're allowed whatever emotion you want to feel. But as I always say, 6 o'clock, you know, we're about 2 hours past the 24-hour mark. But some of them takes are still coming in pretty scorching. Fire this guy. Fire that guy. Bench this guy. Trade that guy. We are obviously going to talk about the defense. We're going to talk about the offense, about Travis Fulgham. Get into some of the things that you've heard already on tape breakdown. Certain guys who played well, certain guys who didn't. I always like to start off with our big picture takeaway that we often give on the podcast, the Inside the Birds podcast, available on any platform that you listen to. 24 hours later, do you have something different than your immediate reaction after the game? I'm curious where you're at with this team.
Yeah, so I did our friend Derek Gunn's podcast on Monday, and he asked a really good question. He said, despite what happened, is there anything or is there any room for optimism going forward? I'm like, yeah, now that you ask me, they're going to get DeSean Jackson back very soon, as soon as this week's game. We'll see what happens in practice this week. They'll get Alshon Jeffrey, they think, back soon.
Allegedly.
Yeah, they're eventually going to get a lot of players left back. If you could score almost 30 points against arguably the NFL's best defense, you should be optimistic. Like, that's what your takeaway should be, despite all the issues on defense, and they're numerous, on the back end, and all the injuries on offense, and they do have some injuries on the back end on defense. And everyone's problems with Jim Schwartz, it varies by the week. One day they want him to run for mayor. Next week, they run him out of town.
Right.
That's just the way it is in every NFL market. In talk radio, I get it. I've lived here my whole life. You're from out east. You're from New York area. You know what it's like in radio. You've worked in radio for decades, so you know. The day after when a team loses, it's bad. But yet another thing that we didn't talk about on that show. We talked about a lot of things on our Monday morning show. I didn't realize, and I knew the division was bad, I didn't quite realize that they're less than a game out of first place. Like, how does this happen at 1-3-1?
Only in the NFC East, baby.
NFC East. Right. Yeah. As everyone calls it now. So they're going to have a shot and they're going to get healthier. And I've always trusted this coaching staff. No matter what happens, you know, after that awful Miami meltdown last year, where it was about as bad of a coaching job that Schwartz has done since he's been here, they bounce back. They always bounce back because these are professional coaches. Schwartz is definitely a top 10 D coordinator. He definitely has his issues. There's a reason why another team runs the wide nine. They just don't. No one really believes in it, but he's had a history of success. Typically, later in the season, things get better. But this was a bad game for a lot of people. But if you look at the positives, what's my latest takeaway? They're going to be in it to the end. Dak Prescott's done for the season. I mean, he won't be ready till the spring. It's a very bad injury. The Cowboys, I was just looking at their injury situation. They're now without three offensive linemen, three starters on the offensive line. They just lost Joe McCoy's backup for the season with an ACL injury, Tristan Hill, second-round pick last year. They've got a lot of injury issues. The Washington team's abominably bad. I knew it. Week one, I got it wrong. I picked the Eagles. The Eagles blew a 17-0 lead, okay?
They should have won that game.
Right, of course.
Washington was not good.
They're terrible.
Right.
The Giants, they got a lot of heart. Their defense is a little bit better than I expected, but they're awful. They're bad. So the Eagles will be in it to the end. And I know people don't want to take solace in it, that the Eagles probably, if they win the division, will have a losing record. But there are some good things. Travis Fulgham, we'll get into him, obviously, tonight. There are some, I was able to get through some people I really trust who graded the tape. And there's some stuff that I was not aware of because you can't tell off TV, man. It's TV scouting is a complete waste of time. You got to watch the game, but you got to be careful of making broad statements off of TV. So I got some stuff I was not aware of because you can't see it. You only get one camera angle. The end zone copy and the sideline copy you get from coaching tape and the overhead shot. So we'll have some stuff over these next 2 hours here on our Monday night show. And I could just tell you that I was surprised. And I'm curious what you thought because we didn't really talk about this. Were you surprised that they scored so many points Eagles did on offense? I was shocked that they had that kind of success.
Well, of course. And so, real quick, your big picture takeaway is, as bad as this loss is, and the obstacles that lie ahead, the nature of this division right now, the Eagles are actually going to be in it until the end. I mean, you feel that way, right?
Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a resounding. Yeah, sure. Yeah. You're Adam Kaplan. You can do what you want.
I don't know.
I'll give you my big picture takeaway. First, I want to let people know Inside the Birds is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up. That's code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So I'm somewhat along the same lines with you. I know that everybody in this city right now wants to take Jim Schwartz and fire him to the moon. And I'm not going to be the Jim Schwartz defense attorney, per se, because we have talked about Jim on our podcast a lot. We recognize him as one of the better defensive coordinators in the league. Certainly, I don't think either of us think he's the best.
No, not close.
We recognize that he has flaws, and some of those flaws really hurt them as far as predictability on defense. However, all right? You know, people are hyper-focusing in on the Chase Claypool, the fourth of four Chase Claypool touchdowns, as if the first three didn't exist or as if there weren't other issues that were with this team. I get it. It's a bad situation. You have Nate Gary, who's everybody's favorite whipping boy right now, and that's perfectly fine.
Because it won't stop,
terrible.
By the way.
Yeah, and it's fine. It's been terrible, right? But
it's not his fault.
I would say this. In 2 weeks ago, before they played, I guess it was Cincinnati, right? And then after Cincinnati, before San Francisco, I said, Adam, Carson Wentz can't continue to be as bad as he's been because the law of averages and the precedent and the track record say he's better than this. He's flawed, but he's better than this. And sure enough, he played better against San Francisco and even better yesterday. Not perfect, still flawed, but better, good enough to score 29 points, right? Jim Schwartz. We have seen this act play out before. We saw 41-7 in New Orleans a few years ago when he had to start the law firm of LeBlanc, Sullivan, and Josh Hawkins, right?
Oh, my God. Josh Hawkins.
Exactly.
Oh, is that right? I don't remember.
Yeah, they got destroyed.
Well, that was when Sidney Jones was out there and he shouldn't
have
been.
And Darby was hurt and somebody else was hurt. Yeah. And they were playing guys they shouldn't have played.
And remember that Peter King was with the, he was embedded with the Saints that week.
They went right after Sidney.
And Sean Payton told him he was going right after Sidney Jones.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So I guess, though, where I differ from my Carson Wentz take, which is he can't go anywhere but up, I do have more concerns about the defense, not necessarily Jim Schwartz coaching, but the defense, because I don't know how you get better at the positions where the Eagles have been hurt the most, and that's at the linebacker and safety level. Will Parks will eventually be back. This is a guy who we have hope for, but he signed a one-year kind of veteran minimum, not even a veteran minimum, but a minimum type contract deal. To ask him to be your savior is a little bit much. Avante Maddox will come back, but he was struggling as an outside corner to begin with, and there's just no room to move him into the slot right now because you already have NRC and LeBlanc playing there.
Yeah, they don't need any more slot corners. They do not need any more inside corners. They need outside corners in the worst way.
And the second part of it is that whenever Jim has been able to turn around, the team itself has also been able to hit that soft spot in the schedule like last year and even the year before where they were able to beat some teams that weren't very good. This time, they've got Baltimore on deck. And then, as you mentioned, you got three straight NFC winnable games. You got Giants, Cowboys, Giants, right? So even if you're 1-4,
yeah,
you could be 4-4. But after that, Adam, after
that, it does get hard.
let me just give you
Murder's
the
Row. Yeah,
here.
It ain't good.
The Browns, who have been very good this year and probably attack the linebacker level as well as the Ravens do or anybody else, right? The Seahawks, the Packers, the Saints, and then the Cardinals. We all know it's about who you're playing, but really more so when you're playing them. Maybe these teams will be destroyed and decimated when the Eagles play them. I don't know. But that's five really difficult games. And I don't know what the Eagles can do between now and then, other than getting Will Parks and Avante Maddox back, that's going to turn around their disastrous red zone defense and their disastrous third down defense and their coverage across the middle. People keep asking us, why is Nate Gary playing? And I keep saying, because who's going to play that spot in his place?
They don't.
So I do think we've got to just ease up a little bit on Jim Schwartz because he's got a track record of being able to take a defense, at least in Philadelphia, without a lot of talent and kind of go through some rough times and then figure it out and then go through better times. The question is, will he get them playing better in time to win some of those NFC East games, and then when they face Murderers Row, win a couple of those games too? That's the big question.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge for him because he's working with backup linebackers who are having to play. The Eagles are a nickel team. This is what we call them. They're a 4-2-5 team. They're going to play in sub-package majority of the time. But the problem is even your two linebackers aren't good enough. And you're subject because, as we've been saying for weeks, eventually teams are going to tackle linebackers, and it's happening now. It's not just a linebacker. It's they're scheming to get the ball into the middle. Tyler Boyd got them badly, okay? Higbee got him for 3 touchdowns. Logan Thomas hitting cover in week one for the touchdown. You saw yesterday Chase Claypool, he had in-breaking routes, out-breaking, handoff, you name it, they did it. Their scheme, the Randy Fichtner, the Steelers OC, the reason why I thought the Eagles might get blown out, they weren't. I give them credit. They hung in there. They still...
Well, only because they scored points.
Yeah, they did. They did, because that was the thing I didn't see coming.
Right.
But I thought the Steelers could score 30. They did. They scored more than that. And it's because the Eagles are so bad at outside corner opposite Darius Slay. They can't compete there. And they have issues. When you said Will Parks, they have trouble covering safeties. Tight ends. They have a major problem now. This has not been a real problem until this season, but it is a major issue. And you know, you look at their schedule. Evan Engram, they play twice. Evan Engram is starting. He's starting to come on here for the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big play tight end. You know, Cowboys aren't great there at tight end.
I would say Dalton Schultz has done
it's
tonight.
Okay.
Look,
yeah.
You're bringing up the point, though. You don't got to be, you don't have to be some all-pro tight end.
Yeah,
like, Tyler Higbee is a good tight end, yeah. But Tyler Higbee scoring 3 touchdowns in a game is not
He's
the Rams
not that good, right.
blueprint
right.
every week.
Right.
Who's the guy from Washington who got,
Logan Thomas.
The Eagles have been giving up tight end touchdowns to Washington for like 10 years.
Well, there was
now,
Jordan Reed. Right.
But even
right.
Vernon, remember the game that he missed
Vernon
and Vernon Davis caught
yeah,
too?
Yeah.
I mean, for whatever reason, the Eagles can never cover a Washington tight end. But again, Logan Thomas, not someone who during the week you're like, man, we got to make sure this guy doesn't beat us because he's not that good.
Logan Thomas is a former college quarterback who was highly inaccurate. Big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And to continue his career, he learned the tight end position with Buffalo and Detroit. He's bounced around. He's found a home. He's off to a good start, but they shouldn't struggle against him.
No.
But that one was totally blown coverage. Yesterday in that game, they gave up too much room. Too much free access is the term.
Yep.
Way too much free access for the receivers, which I didn't understand because they don't have a burner. They don't have anyone who runs in the 4-3s. I don't know what Schwartz was so scared about. You know, the Eagles like to play a lot of man. Well, why don't you press these guys? Enough free access. Because you're not getting off on third down.
I was shocked, especially with Darius Slay on a couple of third downs.
He had a couple plays that he would regret. This was not his best game, by the way.
Right. But for those who say, fire the defensive coordinator, he stinks, he's awful, he's terrible. You can fire him to correct a perceived problem you may have with how this defense is run. But that only takes one part of the equation into play. Who's replacing him? Right? Who's coming in and making Nate Gary a better linebacker? Who's going to make the guy who played the Jalen Mills?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to be better? We've been seeing him get beat over the top for years. That's why they moved him inside. Well, then they got injuries. They had to move him outside. Well, then you see what happens when you play him too much on outside. Claypool got him for a 31-yard touchdown.
They don't have anyone else. See, this is the problem now.
That's my point here, is that to me, and I'm not absolving Jim, I'm not saying he can't do better. He certainly can. At least his track record says he can bounce back. But who is going to take this personnel on defense and make it way better than it has? Because they have been disastrous in the red zone and on third down, which is, by the way, areas where they've been very good in the past under Jim Schwartz. So doesn't that become the first clue that from a personnel standpoint, this might be the worst collection of an overall defense that they're putting out in the Jim Schwartz era?
Well, this is, although I would say this, this is the best defensive line they've had. When you talk, and I know it's 17 is really good, but they're actually more talented now.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
That's a very fair point. The problem is, and I know
they're not on the back end.
I know we're going to get calls today.
And not a linebacker.
Why are you giving the defensive line a pass? They didn't hit. Well, the problem is when you play a quarterback who absolutely knows where he's going to throw the ball within a second and a half to 2 seconds of the snap, it doesn't matter how good your pass rush is. If your coverage can't hold it, and if you have such disadvantaged matchups as, like, say, Nate Gary versus Chase Claypool or Jalen Mills on the outside versus Claypool, it doesn't matter. Ben was Ben had mentally decided where he was going with the ball on too many third downs.
They schemed it. They schemed it because they knew they got predictable coverage. They know the way that Schwartz calls games. They'll play man, but they weren't pressing. And they can't. They're not a good zone team, is the way it's explained to me. Schwartz wanted to play man for years, but he couldn't because he didn't have the talent back there. And he's playing. They're in the top five of man coverage in terms of just playing it game to game.
Right.
But right now, without Maddox, and quite frankly, not a quality second corner, it's just not working either.
They were in zone on that Claypool touchdown, so that didn't work either.
No, they play quarters coverage, right. And now you could say, hey, the coverage was bad. Okay, fine, it was, obviously because they scored.
Yeah, but not just that, but because the linebacker himself could have taken a little more depth and played that a little differently, right.
And Gary is a coverage linebacker. He's a former college safety. Look, it hasn't worked with him. They don't have anyone else.
Have you seen the numbers on him,
it's
by the way?
It's terrible.
24 targets, 24 passes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that right?
The quarterbacks have a 1.
That's impossible.
54. I'm telling you.
I'm sorry, George Kittle is 50 for 50 last week.
It's really not. I would say it's impossible for a tight end to catch all 15 targets thrown his way, but clearly it's not.
I felt bad. I was on the Fanatic this morning with Farzad in the morning show, and I said their play has been embarrassing, but I don't know what else to say. That's being honest. I'm not going to... How could I lie?
Right.
My mom doesn't know anything about football. She knows the Eagles linebackers aren't very good.
This goes back to my bigger takeaway is that 2 weeks ago, I could see a better future for the offense, even in a time where it was very difficult to see it, because track record. Carson, better track record. And also, you knew that eventually they would start to get a little healthier. Now, they actually haven't. Right, Travis Fulgham has developed.
He's dropped out of the sky,
like unbelievable. He just falls into their lap.
It's real, by the way. It is real. Is absolutely real. I know there's some people who didn't think it was real last week. Well, if you don't think it's real now, I don't think you have two eyes. Okay.
I mean, he goes up. The thing you got to like about it, right, to make you know that it's real, is it's not that he's just open on every single play. He had to go up and get about three or four balls there because Carson has been leaving him high for everybody. And we'll get into that with Zach Ertz. But when's the last time? You keep asking me, right? When's the last time the Eagles had an X receiver who could run?
Yeah.
And I said Jeremy Maclin. It's been quite a while. And then I would say to you, when's the last time you had a guy who was winning that many contested catches? Alshon was known for it, but I think Travis has actually won more as an Eagle. Alshon has not won a ton of contested
catches. I was just
going to
say, he had so many guys draped on him.
Mm-hmm.
His route running is apparently way better because the scouting report, talking to another team, was not great with route running.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little raw in that area. But you love the kid, you love the character, the athleticism, the length. No one could see this coming. The line sure didn't, because he wasn't, as I was told to me, he didn't have enough urgency. Well, he got cut twice. Maybe he has it now, because he sure as heck is playing like his hair is on fire.
Yeah.
It's been incredible. And his ability to get open and to beat coverage, everything they tried against him didn't work. He beat Joe Hayden, no problem. Joe Hayden's better than corner.
Pretty good corner, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's just remarkable. I didn't know he ran this well. And he wins. And now the star's really on his back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be fascinating to see how the Ravens, who are great defense, are not quite as good as Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has more stars.
Yes.
Baltimore has a specific scheme that they both play 34.
Mm-hmm.
But Baltimore's very, very physical. Baltimore's not going to give them the free access. Not that he had access, but they're not going to give him as much room. So I'm really interested to see when Fulgham has more conflict,
mm-hmm.
how well he responds, because if they're going to face a man coverage team, because the Steelers change it up, but if they're going to face a team that plays a lot of man coverage, can he win? Now, he won like crazy. He kills zones. He sits in zones. It's like here, and then he goes to the right. And the one thing, though, that I had heard about him that got him drafted, not just the size, his hands were terrific coming out of Old Dominion. Which is surprising for a guy who didn't play football his whole life like these other guys.
I'm sorry,
to believe.
Just
but
you
it's
saying
true.
That, right?
Yeah.
His hands were terrific coming out of Old Dominion.
I know. That's a basketball
that's so
school.
That's so funny to hear.
I know.
As a football player.
I'm going to, honest truth, I didn't even know they had a football program until the Eagles claimed him.
Uh-huh.
I'd heard of him because he was a 6th-round pick of the Lions. I didn't know where he went to school. I looked it up when they claimed him. I'm like, he went to Old Dominion. how good could this guy be?
Exactly.
And then I'm at a practice. I'm like, who is this guy?
That would be like hearing like Daniel Jeremiah. Oh, his motor was relentless coming out of Ursinus. It's like, what?
Ursinus in Collegeville. Come on.
Exactly. You just don't hear these
things.
The home
of Paul Gunther, the Raiders D coordinator, by the way.
Yes, sir. Bucks County guy. A lot of NFL coaches from the Bucks County area or in the Montgomery County area as well, including three head coaches. So, all right. So my point on that was, I could see a little bit of a better future for the offense, some correctable mistakes for the offense when at a time where it was hard to see. You're asking me now, can I see a better future for this defense knowing that the only changes are going to be Will Parks, Avante Maddox, right? There's no savior. As I said in the pod, Brian Dawkins and Jeremiah Trotter are not walking through that tunnel. I don't know how Jim continues to navigate those deficiencies because as we've seen here, teams are doing things differently to go at the Eagles' weaknesses. I texted Greg Cosell, who's a part of the Inside the Birds family, he's on our Sunday pregame show, during the game. And I said, Greg, you talked a lot on our pregame show about the Steeler offense being spread and pass first, but what about all this gadgetry we're seeing with end-arounds with Claypool and Ray-Ray McCloud? I said, have you seen that a lot? He goes, I have not seen that from the Steeler offense. And that's when it clicked.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's when it clicked.
So they're changing it up.
What they're doing is they're looking back. They're like, oh, the Rams really did well.
Robert Woods scored on one.
Yep. Brandon Ayuk took a little screen to the house. We've just got to get movable parts and just move them all around.
Because they won't know where to go.
Right, because this defense is not disciplined. It doesn't communicate.
You ready for this?
And you can attack it.
The Ravens' entire run scheme is deception.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they do is deception.
Oh,
that's
it
how
might
they
be
win.
A nightmare tomorrow. I mean, Sunday. Yeah.
Now they don't have much of a passing game because they're an awful team coming from behind. Awful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they couldn't do anything against the Chiefs. They couldn't do anything in the playoffs. They're a front running team. If they're ahead, you're in trouble.
No doubt.
Now the only good thing is if they're actually disciplined. Eagles have a good run defense, but they've never faced the most sophisticated run team. They're way more sophisticated than the Niners, believe it or not.
Right.
And ironically, it's Greg Roman, who used to be with the Niners. Now he's with the Ravens.
Guy.
Yeah, from Atlantic City. Yeah.
Holy Spirit. All right, 610-632-0975 is the number if you want to get into Inside the Birds Radio. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, we'll be back after this.
97.5, The Fanatic. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. 97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. If you haven't caught it yet, catch the Inside the Birds podcast on every podcast platform.
YouTube, too. Yeah.
And YouTube. Yeah, all of them are visual. And what's the opposite of visual? Audio? How would you describe
audio?
Some, audio version.
Audio visual.
Audio and visual. That's right. And, of course, we've got some other podcasts. So we've got Derek Gunn one. And tomorrow will be Tales from the Blind Side with a few former Eagles offensive linemen that did a great job as well.
It's true.
So you can all catch that on the Inside the Birds platform. And, of course, our story is on InsideTheBirds.com. I want to leave you or pick up with something I said when we went into the break before we get to some calls, right? Chase Claypool had 7 catches yesterday from a variety of different spots, and he touched the ball like Ray-Ray McCloud also did, who led them in rushing in a variety of ways. But Chase Claypool only had 6 catches, one fewer, in the three games before that. So what did that tell you? It means that they looked at Claypool throughout the week as one of their better movable pieces.
Chess piece, yep.
And they can only decipher that, because they hadn't done it before, by watching how teams have attacked the Eagles this year. Right, they're going at that linebacker, as you're saying.
Oh, Hollywood
they're
Brown this week. Oh, boy.
End-arounds. They're using misdirection, of course. Yeah. They're using play action. The Rams did it. The Niners did it, right? Washington probably didn't show you much other than they scored 3 times out of 4 trips to the red zone. But they're taking what they're watching from the Eagles' defense. Even the Bengals were able to hit them for a few plays out of that, gadgetry, right? So this is the tourniquet. This is the bleeding. And I don't know where the tourniquet is, because the defense itself just is not, it's always out of place.
They're not communicating, but they're not talented either.
That's
after
it.
The front line.
The latter part of what you just talked about is the issue. They're just not talented enough at linebacker. They're going to be out of the. When you start backup players, you get backup results.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change. It's just gotten worse.
Right. So the only way to change it, right, is, and we've been asked this a lot, who can the Eagles trade for? You're not trading for all. This is not like getting Golden Tate for a third-round pick a couple of years
ago. The only thing you could do is, like with the Eagles claiming Travis Fulgham, there might be some players they had draftable linebacker grades with
mm-hmm.
that maybe they're not playing very much. That the Eagles say, you know what? We like that we had a draftable grade, a fifth-round grade on this kid. Let's get him in here now. Mm-hmm. Trade deadline is 2 weeks from today. Let's get him in here now. Let's let him play in sub package, or he may not dress immediately, and we'll just practice him, let him warm up, and we'll have him inactive. Then when we think he's ready, he'll play. That you can do. And all you do is you give up either a player you don't want, which is preferable, or you give up a conditional seventh round pick. You don't give up anything because these guys wouldn't be playing for that other team anyway.
Right. So what you're saying, though, invites the inevitable follow up question is, well, why don't they just play the guy they picked in the third round? So I think it's very important for us. To let the listeners understand why Davion Taylor is not out there on defense making an impact. I'll let you go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, what happened is you and I did a couple post-draft shows for Inside the Birds, and you and I had the same information. He probably would not play defense this year. He's super raw. He's a down-the-line developmental player. He's not going to play year one. Now, we didn't know then at the draft that they wouldn't have training camp.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know they wouldn't for sure have an offseason. Didn't look good. So you're talking about a pandemic, no off-season practices, losing over 30 practices, probably 300 snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then you have an abbreviated training camp and no preseason. So you're talking about maybe 400 to 500 snaps you missed for a guy they knew was very, very raw.
Right.
That adds up to not playing year one unless you're on special teams. And that's all he's played. He had 9 special team snaps in this past game. So at least he's getting on the field in some capacity helping because he's very fast.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty high character kid.
Mm-hmm.
But he just he's a project. You and I talked to other teams because I was trying to learn a little bit about him because I knew he went a little bit higher than I had heard.
Yes.
And all I heard is that he's super athletic. He's built really well for nickel, but anyone who drafts him won't play. He won't play year one.
Right.
Okay. So, but the problem is, you just said, they need somebody on the field. No, it's not going to be Michael Kendrick at 31 years old. They don't want him back.
Mm-hmm.
Bradham signed somewhere. I can't remember. He signed
with the Saints, but then they released
him. They caught him, but I think he signed somewhere else. But anyway,
okay.
They don't want him back.
Right.
You have what you have. I would take the trade route. I'll take anyone they had a draftable grade on that they don't have to give up anything for, other than a conditional seventh-round pick or a low-end player, a practice squad player. I'll do anything to get somebody else in here. Because it literally cannot be any worse. It's a shot in the dark, but you know what? Just do it.
Right.
Do something. This isn't fantasy football here, but at some point you've got to change it up because it's just not working.
Yeah, Bradham, by the way, according to Tyler Zuli, signs with the Broncos. So
yeah, there you go.
He's on now. Yeah, I just, it's not, I agree with you, you can do this. But then, as you're mentioning with Fulgham, you're almost hoping for another kind of like a wing and a prayer type move. You're not, you can't trade for the linebacker. They're not going to have a third round pick to get the linebacker version of Golden Tate or the running back version of Jay Ajayi. I mean, I don't know who that is, and I don't know what the Eagles are be willing to give up for a linebacker that's going to make that team want to trade that linebacker. Certainly, they can explore the market, and maybe there's something to be done, but you do also wonder, is it a little bit too little too late? I mean, look, they signed Jatavis Brown. He was the veteran. He retired. And from that moment until now, they did not do anything to further address the lack of veterans.
And they're not working. They're working on very few players each week.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's been surprising. I don't quite understand the thought process. But look, they have what they have. The D-line got handled for the most part. They did get pressure on Roethlisberger. But the problem is, as you were saying earlier, that he got rid of the football.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of knew what they were going to get. This is the problem with Jim Schwartz's defense. Every time I talk to someone who does advance on the Eagles, they say the same thing in their own way. We know what we're getting from here. There are no secrets here.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do anything that any other team isn't doing. In fact, he's not doing what other teams are doing. Yeah, he used to when he had Vinnie Curry. He has Vinnie Curry, but they don't need to do it anymore. He'd stick Curry or somebody else in nickel inside. Okay, it's only been going on for 2 decades. Like, that's nothing new. He doesn't like the blitz. That's something that's definitely new because most teams blitz a lot. He doesn't like doing it because the wide nine,
mm-hmm.
Jim Washburn, the father of it, he didn't like it. Schwartz learned from, he's not going to blitz unless absolutely necessary. So you have what you have. If the front four doesn't win, you lose. the defense will be awful if the front four doesn't win. Simple as that.
Right, and the front four, they can't win every single play because when a quarterback like a Drew Brees or a Ben or somebody's experience knows where they want to go with the ball immediately, then the pass rush doesn't matter at that point. If they know they have an opening, if they know they have a back shoulder, if they know they have a linebacker who's out of place and they're going to, like that play that Cooper Kupp was wide open across the middle against the Rams on a play, then the pass rush does not matter, right? So I know people are going to say you're giving the pass rushers a break. No, it's just... They were hitting Ben when he hold out onto the ball, and Ben made a few out of the pocket quarterback throws that were great. You just can't lean on that every single day, play after play after play. Eventually, you have to stop somebody in the second level. All right, well, you're ready to take some phone calls?
Let's do it. Yep.
All right, 610-632-0975 is the number. Let's go to Mike in King of Prussia. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. So here's my question for you. I had two parts, actually. The first part is, I need to understand Eagles' drafting strategy because they draft like a team that thinks their team is completely full of talent and they can just stash players. Like Sidney Jones was a pick where they were like, we can stash him away for a year. Davion Taylor, project linebacker. Jalen Hurts, like not ready to play quarterback. Like they don't draft for need. They draft like they're a team that's fully loaded for a Super Bowl run, and they have this luxury to like stash players away, which is really egotistical in my mind. Like to think you're that good that you don't need talent immediately. The second part is, as I'm watching it, maybe I'm not watching with a careful enough eye, but Fletcher Cox seems to me to have regressed to a point. We talk about Ertz regressing, but Fletcher Cox looks like he's a shell of his former self. And maybe it's just me, but he doesn't look like he disrupts or gets in the backfield as much as he used to, or that he takes a lot of plays off. Now, am I wrong on that?
I think it's a fair point, Mike, and thanks for the call. We'll address both of your points now. I think it's a fair point that Fletcher Cox has not dominated games in the past, certainly this year and last year, like he used to. I think that's fair.
It's true.
And I think it's fair to wonder if his best days are behind him. I don't think that I don't want to put any game on one person. I don't know that he's hurting them. He's not helping as much as they used to, but they do have a very good D-line. He is commanding a double team because he's still respected. And so you do
he's
have
strong. He moved. He moved. He had a couple when he moved the alignment.
Right.
But you're not seeing the flash plays anymore.
It's almost like the, I don't want to call him the Jason Peters of DT's here, where
he's not even 30 yet.
Right. He's not too old, and he's still, he's impactful enough. But that was kind of what we would talk about Jason Peters. Yeah, he's declined a little bit, but he's still one of the best left tackles in the game. I still think Fletcher Cox is still one of the better defensive tackles in the game, but I do agree he's not as disruptive. Now, on the draft point that Mike made, Adam, he had me until he said you're supposed to draft for need. No, you're not supposed to draft for need because theoretically in the NFL, you need every position. You see how many injuries go happen. You need as many good football players as you can. But I do agree with Mike that it feels like there's been too many luxury picks. You know, you draft a cornerback who's not going to play year one. You draft a backup quarterback in the second round.
That one's such an outlier. That it wasn't really a luxury pick.
No, but it has that feel like we don't need a different type of player there.
Yeah, that one was such an outlier. That one came out of left field.
Yeah.
That one was going to be, I believe, what did I report there? Jeremy Chinn, that was the kid.
Chinn, right.
Yeah, that was what I'd heard the day after the draft. It was going to be Chinn.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing, he's doing well for Carolina. I think that's where he went.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of evidence of that. The City Jones one was a guy that every team was really high on, at least most teams were.
Yeah.
What they didn't know is the lack of competitiveness. That was shocking.
People are making a big deal. I guess he had a good game yesterday, and now it's like
he had a play. He got four. They are so bad. The Jaguars are down 7 starters on defense from last year's year 5. They're abominably bad on defense. So yeah, whatever. The Rasul Douglas
one. They gave up 30 points to it.
Yeah, I watched the game.
It
was awful.
So I don't know how good
Jones played. They look for anything to latch on.
Rasul Douglas thing is fair. The Rasul thing is fair.
Well, it didn't work here. He didn't play well. But here's why they probably... I was talking to someone today about that who I really respect and explained to me this way. Yes, Rasul Douglas didn't play well here. But he has one thing which they don't have. Size. A corner.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite Darius Slay. Sure, he's going to get beat. He's there. Sometimes he actually played well. A lot of them he didn't. That's why he got benched last season. But he's better than Craig James, probably, though James beat him out for a spot. James is better in training camp. But he gives you one thing that James can at that size. And the guy was a third-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he should have been or not is up to debate. But look, he knew the system. It was his last year with the Eagles. He wasn't come back anyway. They probably should have kept him because they couldn't get anything for him.
Right.
Well, no one claimed him.
Keep him just for depth.
No, actually, no. The Panthers claimed him, but mm-hmm. nobody would trade for him. So, yeah, they should have kept him because he's got size. And they are so hurting an outside corner. That was a major mistake. If you looked at, if you ranked the good decisions versus the bad decisions, the bad ones, right up there, top five was lack of
just
help at outside corner.
About?
Yeah. Man, boy, did they whiff on that one. I don't know. They didn't even draft a corner. How is that even possible?
Well, it is possible because this is a team that almost never drafts a corner, especially high in the draft, right? How long had it been? When they took Sidney and Rasul in 2017, right? Second and third round. How long had it been before
might have been
that?
Sheldon and Leto?
It was. So that was 2002.
Gosh.
So
that high, that's the last time I spent a first or second.
Remember,
round
I
pick?
Went through all the list.
Oh yeah, we did
it.
Yeah,
they were all third to fourth.
So
to fifth.
Jeff and I did this little thing. We did a retrospective of their drafts, and Jeff said he was just musing. You know, I don't think they've spent a high round pick. And you looked it up.
Yeah,
and we were going over their inclinations of what they would do in the drafts. It was remarkable. They just had not addressed the corner position for well over a decade.
Not in the draft. I mean, they kept buying guys.
Right. And they missed on some of the drafts that they had, but they didn't. Now, although I would say that if they put Maddox back at slot corner next year, he's probably going to be really good. And if they.
Slot, yeah.
Yeah. And if they get a true outside corner opposite Slay, they'll be good. But right now, they've got a crisis, man. They got at linebacker. I got that one wrong. I thought they'd get away with it because I thought their defense would be better. Now, Will Parks, who you mentioned, he'll be back. Relatively soon, probably in 2 or 3 weeks, probably hopefully 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a significant hamstring tear. I mean, the strain was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And those, he's not an offensive lineman where you could come back sooner or defensive lineman.
Right.
He's got to run around.
Run and cut and
stop and start. Right. So they're in trouble. Like, I felt like watching this team yesterday, we haven't even talked about Wentz yet. This is how much we've had to get to. But if he keeps playing like this, they're going to score in the mid to high 20s. Now, obviously, Fulgham's got to keep this up. It's almost hard to believe it again.
Well, I mean, Deshaun might be back this week.
Yeah, he could come back
after the bye.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah.
But they're going to have to win. They're going to have to score high 20s, low 30s. I just don't. This defense, against the Giants, okay, the Eagles D-line will win against the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
But you got Darius Slayton, who had another big game. Week one, he had a huge game against the Steelers and a huge game last week.
Yep. And Ingram, as you mentioned.
Yeah, he's coming on.
A move tight end.
Yep. They've got Golden Tate. They'll eventually get back Sterling Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to have to score in the high to mid-20s to win.
Yeah, and we'll see if they can keep that going and tighten up on defense. By the way, if you want to have some fun, Adam, and I know every time I bring out that list of all those cornerbacks that the Eagles drafted.
There's some fun. Jack Akeguanu.
Jack Akeguanu. Who can forget the immortal Travard Lindley?
Oh, with the ankle injury. Yeah.
And Matt Ware, who was that kind of corner safety hybrid that they drafted, I want to say in 03 or 04. So there were some real names on that list. But yeah, Jack Akeguanu and Travard Lindley always stand out to me.
Yeah, someone's sending something to me on Twitter, at Jeff Brood. I could just tell you, from someone who actually works in the National Football League, grade the tape, Cox had some plays where he threw the lineman back, like into the quarterback, so we know. He didn't have a great game. I'm not saying he did.
No.
I didn't mention any double teams. He just, in the game yesterday, I know that they had a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
But Cox had some plays where he just dominated. The problem is, though, he's not having the consistency that you're used to with this player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good. I mean, he does turn 30 in December.
Right. He doesn't have any sacks this year, correct?
Yeah, and he's gonna want to have his contract. The way that some people think around the league is he's getting to the point where he's probably going to want to get a new deal. And if I'm the Eagles, why would you do it?
No, I know. But he keeps making Pro Bowl, so you can,
Exactly. Sometimes it's a popularity contest.
Right.
But,
He has 1.5 sacks.
If their D-line doesn't win, they lose. I mean, it's just, there's no way they can win with these linebackers in the outside corner position other than Slay. And the safety play has been inconsistent. They're just a defense that, has got so many flaws. It's just on the back seven.
Mm-hmm.
Their D line from a depth standpoint is about as good as it gets, and they'll get Vinnie Curry back. Jeff, I don't know if you've heard of yet or anything.
I believe he's going to practice this week.
And
see if he can play on Sunday.
Now, okay, here's the question with Vinnie.
Which you need a good run stopping D against the Ravens.
The Ravens? Well, we'll see what kind of shape Vinnie's in.
Mm-hmm.
But once he gets back to normal, I mean, they're legit nine deep on the D line.
Yeah,
who has this kind of depth? And it's great. But
can you move any of those guys to safety?
To safety or linebacker? Really, linebacker. I mean, right. Yeah. So anyway, that's where that's at.
All right, 610-632-0975. Greg in Bethlehem is up next on Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Greg?
Since Baltimore runs a lot of misdirection and fancy stuff. Does that mean the DNs are not going to crash? They're going to have to play contain?
Yeah, but I think they did a pretty good job of that against San Francisco. You saw Barnett have some good run stops. You saw Graham. I know that they did a terrible job of it against the Rams, but the D-line themselves, I thought, did a better job on that stuff.
And they went against Niners. Yes, and they went against they went against Greg Roman with the Niners, and Roman was out there many years ago under Harbaugh. But this thing is so sophisticated because of the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. I'm just worried about Mark Andrews.
And you know why Mark Andrews does well? Because teams are so concerned about Lamar Jackson running.
Yep.
They just don't pay any attention to Mark Andrews.
Well, one thing the Eagles, to your point, Greg, one thing the Eagles didn't do well against San Francisco, and it almost didn't hurt them. It should have hurt them more. You saw it on the second play of the game. Is that they bit on the play action. Kyle Juszczyk got wide open on the left side.
Oh, should have been a touchdown.
And the quarterback, if that's Jimmy Garoppolo, with a healthy ankle, he probably hits him, and it's a big game.
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that you're going to see with the Ravens. I mean, they're going to be able to get the ball to whoever they've got. I mean, they've got a ton of interior receivers. They got great tight ends, not just Andrews. I mean, Nick Boyle can be a difficult.
He's a blocking tight end.
He can catch a little bit.
Overpaid tight end, $6 million a year.
Wow, is that how much?
But so many teams wanted him. That's what he had leverage.
He's got a good agent.
He does, yes. But I would say this. The Eagles offense, let's get into him for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
If he plays as well as he did last, this was his best game by far of the year. He was really good. There's a throw, and I can't wait to watch it because someone has already graded the tape for me, told me. There was a throw. Not only was his best throw of the year to Folgum, it was about a 35-yard pass.
Mm-hmm.
Great route, great throw. It was about as big. If you thought the play last week to Folgum for the touchdown was big time, wait to see this thing. It was vintage Carson from 17. Carson, as you set up very well earlier in the show, he's starting to get there. He's not perfect. He's still holding the ball a little bit too long. He's taking hits that are on him, not the offensive line. Somewhere on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
But he's starting to come on here. And I'll tell you what, when you play as well as he did against that great defense, you got to feel really good about it. Like, I'm going to probably eat these words like I eat sometimes with these words, but I'm going to say it. Carson's not the problem right now. It's the defense.
It was. And then that's the problem is that he was the problem. They fixed the problem. Yeah. And then another problem
leaks.
Came up.
I know.
It's like that bucket of water that's got the four holes and you stick your thumb in one.
Right,
you can't see the other three. You stick your thumb and then the water comes out the other one. Then you stick your thumb. Then it comes out the other one. So that there's a lot to break down, a lot to parse. And I want to get to more on Carson and also on Doug Peterson and his kind of flip-floppy personality. I'll tell you what I mean when we get back from the break, because there's something I'm noticing here that I'm not really computing in my head. We'll take more phone calls also. 610-632-0957 is the number. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher here on Inside the Birds Radio on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
That's right. It's Inside the Birds Radio. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And Adam alerted me before we went to the break that I gave out the wrong phone number. I must have flipped the 5 and the 7. Is that what I did wrong?
Yeah, that was funny.
So it's 610-632-0975 is the number. And Romine in West Philly is up next, but he's got to hold on 1 second because Two things I want to say. First, remember, Inside the Birds is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up. That is code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Second, I told you I wanted to get into something on Doug Peterson, but I realized I've gotten a couple of tweets throughout the day that I believe are misconstruing some information or whatever's out there about the Eagles and their power structure, and it's in regards to Jim Schwartz, right? You and I both know Jim Schwartz has a powerful voice in the organization. You've reported that from what you've heard. I've reported that. He's a veteran defensive coordinator. Yes, he has a powerful
voice. He has input.
Yeah. But we can unequivocally say Jim Schwartz does not draft the players. Okay, he is not the GM.
Is that out there somewhere?
So, and this is the third time I got it today, and I'm not trying to make fun of the guy, but I'm going to let him know the Twitter handle is @PhillyFanForLife8, and he says, I totally blame Schwartz because Jim has personnel say, and he chose those bums on the defense. No, he did not. In fact, you know, last year they had a pretty good linebacker named LJ Ford who you and I thought should play more and should still be on the team. And he was cut before a certain deadline because it helped the Eagles in the compensatory pick formula. The signing of him in the offseason didn't count against them in the formula and helped them get an extra draft pick in this year's draft. I don't remember which is the pick they got and who they used and who they took. But that is not Jim Schwartz saying, get rid of this linebacker who's pretty good. That was an organizational decision led from Howie Roseman on top because of the comp pick formula. And in fact, I think if you went back and listened to Jim Schwartz's comments after, it didn't sound like he was really thrilled that he and Andrew Sandejo were no longer with the defense. Because the defense was pretty ravaged last year by injuries at the time. So you can criticize Schwartz. You can say his defense is passive. You can say he doesn't do this, that, and the other that you don't like. But he does not select the players.
I just don't know where... You know, the narrative...
You're shocked that even people think that,
no,
right?
Just oh. Really fun. Like, look, some of it's true about him having input. It's
definitely
true. Yeah,
he has a powerful voice, and he has input.
They
right.
listen, but he doesn't pick the players. The general manager does. Roseman has personnel control. That's a fact.
Right.
It's in his contract, so...
Jim Schwartz may say, hey, I need a linebacker. Two years ago, I reported this, in the offseason, Jim said, I need a defensive tackle. Remember, they were really beat up at defensive tackle. It was only Fletcher Cox. Even he was a little beat up. And they went out and they signed Malik Jackson, right? Because Jim wanted a defensive tackle. So they went out and got him Malik Jackson, who's played well this year. Okay, it's unfortunate he got hurt. But he does not sit in the war room and say, he may say, I want a linebacker this year, but it's not like he's saying, all right, I'm filling out the card. Davion Taylor, linebacker, Colorado here, send it in. No, that's not his job, and that's not what he does. So... while you can kind of agree that he has a powerful voice, does not mean he picks any of the players on defense personally. So I just wanted to get that out.
I didn't know that he was even out there. So
yes,
now we dispelled that. Yes.
All right. 610-632-0975. I'll get into Doug. My Doug Peterson comment in a minute. But Ramin's been patiently waiting here. What's going on, Ramin?
Yeah, how y'all doing?
How are you?
I got three things. Right. One thing. Right. When you look at the Eagles' offense, right. You could say Miles Sanders, Goddard, the receivers, the young guy who's hurt right now that we just drafted.
Rager.
This kid, Folkum, and Ward, right? When you look at the future, when you look at them, you could say, oh, okay, that's a nice little future thing we got going on, right? Then when you look at the defense, right, now you got all these older guys, right? Now, and I'm thinking if we lose to Baltimore, right, do you think it's time for us to say, all right, listen, Fletcher Cox, he'll be 30. Let's try to see what we can get for him. A couple of these veteran guys who got value, even our tight end, Zach Ertz, see if we can get for him so we can start building because we got a lot of holes in a lot of different areas. As far as the defense, like, we haven't had a playmaker on defense in years. I mean, Fletcher Cox was always a dominant dude on the offensive line, but I'm talking about that emotional – you know, playmaker, that guy, you know what I'm saying, like, since Dawkins. Like,
yeah, let me stop you there, because well, first we have to address, if you're going to be sellers, the trade deadline, Adam, is October 28th?
Whatever the last Tuesday of the month is.
Yeah. All right, so you have the Ravens game and the Giants game before that. If they're 1-6-1, maybe that conversation is taking place. But mm-hmm. I don't think even being actually they can't be 1-6-1. There's only two games. They're 1-3-1 now, right?
Yeah.
So the worst they can be is 1-5-1.
But this division is so bad. Wouldn't you just hang in there?
Well, I think if you only had one win, maybe.
Can I say this?
Sure.
Yeah. Last year we dealt with mediocrity. Right. Last year we had like really. I mean, we came on late on. Right. But for us, in order for us to be a championship contender, we gotta change things. And it seemed like every year we continue keep going down the same road except for 2017. Guys getting hurt. We're in the middle of the pack team. At the end of the season, we come along. Like, so now I'm thinking, we so much above the salary cap. They said we were going to be above the salary cap. Well, this is the time that you trade a Fletcher Cox. I'm talking about even if we want to. If we looking at the division, at this poor division saying, oh, we can win a division. No, all right, that's not the goal.
You're giving it up then. You're basically folding the tent. If you're going to start selling, that's really what people want to know now, is are Eagles going to be sellers?
I don't think Cox is the guy.
Yeah, and there's issues with the dead money on his contract if you trade him.
Plus, you just signed Javon Hargrave, so you can afford to have Fletcher Cox now be your... I mean, I don't think it's going to be a changing of the guard that quickly, but Hargrave plays well. You still have two pretty good defensive tackles for the next few years, even if you hang on to Cox. Zach Ertz, that's a different story, right? Because, as he just mentioned, you're kind of developing this group of wide receivers.
Well, listen, again, just so we're clear, I'm not reporting this. This is just me just looking into this as you bring up Goddard's name.
Uh-huh.
Or Ertz's name. If Goddard had not gotten hurt and been playing really, really well, it wouldn't have shocked me if the Eagles would trade Ertz.
Mm-hmm.
Because Zach wants a new deal.
Right.
It's not going to happen this year. I'm told they have not talked since like mid to late August. And that's what Zach wants. Once the season starts, it's over. That's fine. But in terms of the future, had Goddard not gotten hurt, there's no question that with Zach's situation and Zach wanting a new deal and there's no guaranteed money, it's a very tradable contract.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if you're going to move him, that team needs to find a team that wants him and is going to want to extend his contract because he's not going to want to play with a deal not redone.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a challenge with an older player who's 30 years old.
Mm.
And you know, now with him having two games where you scratch your head, don't quite know what's going on there. Although I would say that you and I talk privately about this. Though Wentz is playing well right now, some of his throws to Ertz have been way off.
Very high.
Yeah.
Yeah, specifically high, right? That he's throwing Ertz high for whatever reason. In fact, I don't think it's just Ertz. It's just that when Carson is missing, he's missing high. Fulgham had to go up and get a couple of balls yesterday,
mm-hmm.
which shows you that across the board, Carson's just...
He has that issue where he still locks that left leg.
Mm-hmm.
And it does cause the ball, because it's involved with the hip rotation. It causes the ball to go high, to float.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that you're going to have to deal with. It's
been there his whole career.
I know, but it's gotten progressively worse.
Mm-hmm.
There are 3 to 5 throws that you go, where are you going with this football? The guy's wide open, and you're selling it over his head, but then he gets himself together, and he looked really good yesterday. This wasn't a vintage Wentz game. He had some vintage Wentz throws, but he was pretty good in that game, and I'm
good
pretty encouraged.
Yeah,
I'm pretty
good
encouraged
to
with
win.
It. Yeah.
So they're not going to have a fire sale because the Eagles will never do that. They may make a trade, like we were just talking about, where a player they find a good value in return as far as a draft pick, but they're not going to just pawn off 3 or 4 players. I think that's what Ramin was kind of getting to, if they're really out of it, because they're never going to fully rebuild, right? They're never mm-hmm. going to fully rebuild in a Sixers process style. That's just not going to happen. They want to compete every year while they replenish the roster. And to be honest with you, that's what good teams do and should
do. Seahawks are the best at it. John Schneider, their GM, told me that
fantastic
2 years ago. He said, there's no way. He goes, we're good enough to win while we do this.
Right.
And he was right. Obviously, having a great quarterback. I mean, again, I don't know if you watched the end of the Minnesota game last night.
Oh, I did.
It was absurd.
Uh-huh.
There's no, the rain was, it was just ugly. The Seahawks got dominated. But typical of Mike Zimmer, the Vikings, you would have thought the game was 30-0 because all they did is dominate, because all they wanted to do was run the football.
Right.
They're only up 13-0. And you got to keep scoring. See, that's the thing about running the football. If you don't score, it's meaningless.
Right.
You got to keep scoring and scoring and scoring. Then you hide the football. Then pound it in the run.
Right.
But
the Steelers are very good at turning over the roster and staying competitive.
They're amazing at it. They draft great. They're one of the top teams at drafting.
They're best. The Ravens do a good job of turning over.
Yep.
So you don't have to just pawn off player after player after player. You just have to be able to draft better and hit more on the acquisitions that you bring in. And that's really the bottom line with that.
I know that people want us to get into this. We're going to delve more into about this in the offseason because this is a regular season.
Right.
But people have been asked this, what is their philosophy of roster building? And part of it is the way that they think. I remember talking to Joe Douglas about this, and Howie Roseman thinks the same way. And this is really what Joe Banner brought in. We build from front to back, offensive and defensive line. There's no question that they've done this just about as well as anyone. But the issue at linebacker is something that I'm finally giving in on. I've waved the white flag. I've given up. It's bad.
Yeah.
And this is not acceptable.
Right.
Like that. And you mentioned earlier about Jatavis Brown retiring. I know that was sudden, but the guy was from another team. How about your own homegrown linebackers?
Mm-hmm.
How about developing some guys? Nick Gary, okay, he was drafted by them. He was a former safety.
Right.
He's just not good enough.
Right.
How about evaluating better and drafting better and developing better?
Sure.
Drafting your own guys.
Higher. You know, like second round.
Now Taylor, they drafted in the third.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't look very good,
right?
But he's not playing,
right?
Now you're gonna have to wait on him, but the linebackers in today's NFL, you got to be able to cover, and that's the way the Eagles looked at it. They want their smaller, faster linebackers who could cover.
Yeah, but that's the problem. What did I say? The passer rating against him is like 138.6.
Was it 22
like
out of some number? Like
24 out of 24?
Whatever it was, they haven't had an incompletion against them.
Right.
Hard to believe.
So their coverage linebackers are not doing a good job covering. Yeah. So that's an issue unto itself. All right. So the Doug Peterson thing I wanted to bring up to you.
All right.
Because we kind of had this discussion on the podcast, and I feel like I changed your mind a little bit, but I'm still, even 24 hours later, I can't figure it out. He has an opportunity. He tried to kick the field goal with Jake Elliott. That was a 57-yard.
Yeah, your reason convinced me. I changed my mind
on
it.
But there were some things I didn't even know when I said that was a bad idea. For example, that would have been the longest field goal ever in Heinz Field history. Now, we talk about the guys in his ear, the analytics people. That's analytics, right? That's got to fall under some sort of form of data that tells you what percentage of this kick being made is.
Sure.
I don't care that Jake Elliott's made a lot of long
Ryan
kicks.
Pagnetti, he's the guy? It's one of the Pagnetti TJ brothers. Pagnetti, whoever it is gives him the numbers.
Yeah. Isn't there a Ferrari guy's last name is Ferrari?
John Ferrari's more of a...
I thought that was the fourth down, whether you go for
might
it or
be. I don't know.
Either way, he's got people, right? He's got to know.
Analytics people, sure.
He has to know going into the game that it doesn't matter if he's got a strong leg kicker, that stadium, that side of the stadium especially, has been a menace to anybody trying to kick at 55 or longer. So the percentages of that kick going in have to be really low. But I don't want to punt, like I told you, because I'm not...
Your reason was much better than mine. The reason why you go for it is because if you don't get it... Yes, it's real. The yardage markers are negligible between going for it, not getting it, or kicking a field goal and not making it.
Right,
and then you respot the football.
Mm-hmm.
But the concern there, the reason why I said initially punt it, because their defense was so bad they just couldn't stop Roethlisberger.
Right,
that I just don't want to give them the football.
Yeah,
but that's actually more point to go for it and just keep moving the football because they got to score. Hey, heck, they cut it down to two when Peterson won that challenge. It was a great challenge. That completely changed everything.
Changed everything.
That changed the momentum. It looked like the Eagles were going to get blown down by 31-14, something like that. They were getting squashed. And boy, did that change everything. That was a great challenge.
And then the second thing that didn't hit my head until after we talked to Adam was that just last week against the Niners, they were facing 4th-and-4, and they went for it, and Carson completed a pass to John Hightower. Right? And I think that was on the drive where they scored the go-ahead touchdown. So, A, you shouldn't try a kick of over 55 yards in that stadium. B, you should go for it because last week you went for it, made it, and then you were also, you scored your first touchdown, you went for two.
How about that?
So, why are you all into being aggressive and going for the jugular in 1 week? And then the next week, when you're actually doing a better job scoring points, you're in it. Why do you all of a sudden lose that?
And you know what's comical? Last week, he won for the 2-point conversion on the first series. That was clearly a message that, hey, I'm going to be aggressive. I don't care. He denied it, but come on.
That was such
nonsense. He absolutely did. And then this week, he doesn't. When Sanders scored, I mean.
I don't understand.
I don't know. It's maddening sometimes what coaches do. It's absurd. I'm a big Peterson fan. I've always said that. I'm a supporter because he gets his players to play hard. He's been a really surprised as a head coach. When he was really bad year one, he had a lot of issues of getting command and getting buy-in, and something happened. I don't know if people got in his ear, but something happened. He changed, and he started getting it. And, I mean, no matter when the chips are down with this team, just when you think they can't do it, they do it.
Yeah, and that's a big reason why we got to take it game to game, keep our kind of critiques to what's going on now. Because as soon as you start saying, fire this guy, or they'll never be good on that guy, or the, like, think about last year. They lose to Miami. Oh, it's their third straight loss.
As bad as
New
it
England,
is.
Seattle, Miami. Miami was the worst out of all of it. There's no way. And all of a sudden, they turn around and they win games.
4-4.
Now, again, they played a softer schedule. It's going to be harder this time.
Much harder.
But the point I would make to that is
But we say that, they could lose five in a row.
Right.
But the problem is the division is so bad. There's a legit chance because Dallas is so beat up. Now, it's almost certain that a team with a losing record will win this division. It's just a matter of, will it be 6-9-1 if the Eagles win it? Will they be 7-8-1?
But what does that do? I guess my point in the long run is if you make the playoffs at 6-9-1, or even if you win the division, and then you get whacked in the first round, or maybe you get lucky in the first round, you're not better than you were the year before just because you were in the playoffs.
I do want to mention, to what you just said, because we've had this question on our Facebook board, or Inside the Board's board on Facebook. If the Eagles make the playoffs, will they still admit that they have a roster that needs work? Of course. They're not stupid. They know.
Right.
They know this roster's
flawed. Sure, they made the playoffs and fired a bunch of coaches.
Right. They know they got a problem outside corner. Okay, they know that. They know they're bad at linebacker. They know that offensive line, they need younger guys. They got to get younger. They have a lot of offensive linemen. They have to get future starters there. They know they need a backup running back. They missed on Boston Scott and Corey Clement. It's five games now.
Yeah.
They don't have a number two running back. If Sanders gets hurt, they're in major trouble. Period. End of story.
I would have to agree with you on that. 610-632-0975. I can't wrap my head around someone who's a head coach who is so passive aggressive from week to week that you don't necessarily know what their philosophy is. I after 2017, I would have told you that Doug Peterson is the most aggressive coach in the NFL, and his team
through
is
analytics
better for it.
Yes.
Because he makes decisions that guys like Mike Zimmer won't make, and his team thrives off that. And by the way, Shield Kapadia with the tweet of the year last night.
Okay, what did he say?
Mike Zimmer not getting the first down on 4th-and-1 last
ridiculous.
Year means that
that's
he
not,
will go 10 years before he goes for it on 4th-and-1 again.
He hates analytics.
I know.
It's why, I like Zim personally. I always enjoyed talking to him, but it's hard to imagine they're going to win with his way of thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, until I worked with Joe Banner at ESPN, I was always, you had to run first. I'm so naughty. I do know that there's certain times around the football, but if you look at numbers, you have such a better chance of winning if you throw in the first half. It's like incredible.
Yeah, especially if you have a good quarterback.
Yeah, you absolutely come out throwing. It took the Seahawks front office years to convince Pete Carroll to do what they're doing this year. I mean, you'd have to tie his hands behind his back. It was torture for him to come out throwing.
Mm-hmm.
When the Atlanta game, week one, 12 passes, 2 runs, first 2 series. I was shocked, but what I was told was true. They were going to come out throwing. Doug Peterson gets it. Now, there are times, though, if you're plowing a team, if you're still throwing a lot, but when you run, you're plowing a team, you might start running a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, the numbers show it's indisputable evidence. You can't challenge it because it's true. Bill Walsh believed in it. Bill Belichick believed in it. Andy Reid believed in it. Just watch Andy Reid now.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he believes you come out and throw.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you have the right weapons, right? You can't be Jets and throw.
That was my issue, though. It's funny you bring that up before we move on here. The thing that really would bother me is when, I know they had that committee with Staley and Buckhalter and Westbrook, but when Donovan was so off with his mechanics, could you find a different way to move the football?
Right.
That's when, obviously.
That's what Andy did. Yeah.
Yes, but now if Mahomes has a game like that, which he probably will never have because he's unbelievable, but if he does, you've got a different way to scheme up your run game.
Right.
This is where now, because Eagles are really bad in the interior with the two guards trying to run the football, scheme it up. Find another way to free up Miles Sanders.
Yeah, the Eagles are going to have a tough time running the ball this year, I think, in general, for what you just said. Their interior offensive line, not Jason Kelce notwithstanding, although he's not necessarily a power run guy either, but your left guard, your right guard, not Brandon Brooks, not Isaac Seumalo, although I assume Sam Alu at some point.
Some point will be back.
By the way, every time we talk about who's coming back and why that might be a good thing, like I say, Will Parks could coming back might help, and I say that'll enable you to move Jalen Mills back to safety, yes, and also Avante.
Well,
Maddox.
Corner would be Maddox.
That's true. But if Maddox comes back, but I don't take into account when I say that who's going to be gone by then, because the Eagles don't make it through a game or two without a bunch of new injuries that pop up. Neither does any other team.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great for Lane Johnson.
Yeah, just because I was going to ask you about that.
I haven't heard an update, but when he's getting a second opinion and he keeps leaving games,
yeah.
It's, you know, when I reported the story on Inside the Birds pregame that he had tightrope surgery, because I'd heard of the surgery, and then I had to do some research when I found out what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew there would be some soreness and he was coming back too early, but I wasn't expecting this. Keep leaving every game early, like leaving. I don't understand it.
Is he making it worse?
I don't know.
Or is it just because Doug Peterson suggested that it's just very difficult to get the thing loosened up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may need like 3 or 4 good weeks of
well, maybe. Okay, so speaking of, maybe the second opinion might be, hey, what can we do here to make him more comfortable? What is there? Stretching exercises? Whatever it is, you can't keep having this.
Right.
It's detrimental to their progress and the continuity of their offensive line.
All right. We do need to get into a little bit more of Carson Wentz, Fulgham, and Zach Ertz. What is going on with Zach Ertz? I know you've got something on that, and I've got some opinions too, so we will continue to talk about that. And more callers, hold on, because when we come back, we'll come to you as well. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, amazing. It's the last segment already. Inside the Birds.
It's unbelievable. It's 2 hours.
I know. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher. But we still got a good about a half hour left to get through some things and take some calls. 610-632-0975.
There's a lot we haven't talked about tonight, actually.
Yeah, I wanted to get with the Zach Ertz thing because...
Okay. Oh, okay.
He's clearly not playing great. But if you go and look at all of his targets, or I should say this, if you watch the tape, you see he's open at times... Especially
not
last
getting
week,
it. Yeah.
Not getting the ball, and then when he is getting the ball, it's not exactly like Carson puts the ball in Travis Fulgham's hands a week ago, 40 yards down the field, as if he's like Aaron Rodgers every single snap.
I don't know.
He can't hit Zach Ertz.
It's weird. Like he missed Ertz for 2 touchdowns this season. I'm told.
Yep.
And some throws, as you said, were too high. They sailed. Some are at his feet. What can you do? Now I would say though. So that's not on Jack, but there were a couple throws where the body language could have been better, someone pointed out to me.
He looks annoyed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not like Zach, so I expect this to change because Peterson also could help. Depth of route isn't great. Not that Zach was a big run downfield guy, but depth of route could be a little bit longer. Now, I thought Peterson made a fair point. When Goddard's there, the attention's going to go more. It's going to start... Going towards Goddard from defense because he could run vertically. He's faster than Zach.
Mm-hmm.
More explosive.
Mm-hmm.
Also bigger physically. And then you get Jackson back. It's all going to help. Because the other thing is, not that Travis Fulgham can't go deep. He can, but he's not what you call a speed guy.
Right.
When you don't have speed, Jeff, it just makes everything compressed. It makes it harder. That's what was so impressive about Wentz's game overall, other than some throws he'd like to have back. They drove the field down there. Fulgham with longer routes. I mean, the guy averaged over 15 yards per catch for a guy that just plucked off waivers.
Right.
And this guy's legit. I mean, this guy's legit. And then they didn't get that. Greg Ward had his typical 4 for 25 or 26, short area because he don't run very well. Hightower is shaky. He's playing because he has to. They don't have anyone else. And they got to get more receivers on the field. And Burnett, he may not be called up. Well, they can't. They were running out of call ups, but mm-hmm. I don't see him coming back. Once they get guys back, I don't see him sign off the practice squad.
Well, the good thing will be from an offensive standpoint, if DeSean Jackson comes back on Sunday against the Ravens and he takes his place at the Z, You have Fulgham playing the natural X. You've got Ward in the slot. And I think you can start to see, like, you know, the future, or not the future going forward because Deshaun's older, but what this offense can be for the rest of this year if some guys stay healthy. Now, when Jalen Reagor comes back, it'll be interesting to see how they
Use him.
How they use him if Fulgham continues to play well in the X. You could put Reagor in the slot, play more 11 personnel.
Well, I would love to see that because, Jeff, that I'd not thought of that.
Use that explosive.
He's so explosive. They've when Aguilar was there in 17 was the vertical slot, he really added something.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He was fantastic as a vertical slot. Because if you can get Jackson, for goodness sake, to stay on the field, and if Fulgham, he's not going to keep this up. It's like, it's not possible.
Well, yeah, he's not going to have 150
yards. No, but if he could have 4 to 6 catches a game and look like a true X, they're really onto something. Plus, as you said, he's young. Rager's super young. Fulgham's young. Well, he's a little bit older, though, because he's actually
19 years old.
No, but he might be 25, I think. I think he's a little bit older. I need to look
Fulgham
it up.
Wow, Fulgham was 25?
Yeah, he is. Okay, Travis Fulgham is, he actually turned 25 in September.
Wow.
Well, remember, he was not born in this country. He was born overseas.
That's right.
He started his career late. He played some basketball and some football in high school. Old Dominion did recruit him, but the way he explained to me was that he still was a walk-on. And he was a late bloomer, but the thing that, and you were laughing when I said it, his hands are remarkably good for guys. Like, he might have the best hands on the football team. That's how crazy it is.
Absolutely. He's the best contested
the way he
guy
can see.
Got.
Okay. You see this where we don't have the picture of television here, but he has the Chris Carter open handed palms out.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys catch with their palms down, which is the wrong way to do it. And hopefully, Fulgham keeps this up because, man, this is like, without him, they're not scoring 14 points yesterday.
Can I make a very obvious statement about Travis Fulgham?
All right.
Obvious, but yet incriminating and damning at the same time. Because he has size, and because he has enough quickness to get open, and because he's winning in contested catch situations, he has become everything the Eagles thought they were going to be getting in J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. A guy who can play the X, has good size, can win in contested catch situations, and can kind of get open in those areas and windows and catch the ball, which you've seen very little of from J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So in many ways, this is what Travis Fulgham is giving them what they are hoping they used a second-round pick on with J.J.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, nice catch with 8 seconds left to go, ball's in the air, over the shoulder, you catch the ball, it's great. The fact that you even tried to give the first down celebration as the seconds are ticking off the clock.
And that was a little...
I don't think they would have gotten a playoff anyway. But,
no, but the Hightower
one. What's going through your head? You know,
you should have Shelby. I know.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, man, it was a good catch. I mean, 37 yards. But and then Hightower not getting out of bounds. You can't have this. This situational awareness.
All right.
You can't have this. Especially when you're so challenged because your defense can't stop anything.
Right. He also let the ball on the play before the bomb.
What a throw. He didn't even get his hands on it. It went right through his hands. You got to catch. I know it's a very tough catch, but you got to get your hands on it. So the younger players have to be better.
Yes.
We've kind of outlined that. And then how funny is it? I said on a pregame show, watch Quez Watkins draw pass interference. Voila.
You said more than that. You said watch Quez Watkins be what Shelton Gibson was against Seattle last year.
Well, you know what I said to that game? I said he would do.
Yeah. And then he went out and literally had, I don't know how many snaps.
That was a weak call.
It was a weak call. There were a lot of weak
calls. There was a bad call, and I'm not an Eagles homer. I called down the middle.
Yeah.
Both teams got benefit of good calls and got nailed for bad calls. Slay's first penalty absolutely was not a penalty.
Correct.
Awful call. Second one was marginal. I know the Eagles felt that it wasn't.
At least it was fair.
Yeah,
I mean,
fair. You can make a case, but bogus. No. The way that Mike Pereira explained it to me, the former NFL director of officials, when I worked for Fox, and then I talked to Mike over the years at the officiating meetings when they meet with the media, he says, it's real clear. If you get an advantage, we're calling the flag. We call what we see. We can't legislate intent. We just look at it. Is it an advantage? If it is, we're dropping the flag. The first one was not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the Craig James one?
Last year against the Packers? Oh, no, Craig James. Jalen Mills.
Yeah. Again, I just didn't see it. But, right. Again, overall, the officiating was not very good for either side in that game.
Now, a couple of holdings I thought weren't called either in critical moments, but that's every game. 610-632-0975. David in North Philly up next on Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
What's up, Dave?
Fogle, he was making those catches that I expect Alshon Jeffrey to make.
Yeah.
He went up and attacked the ball, got it, put his body in between, and I'm not sure how fast he is, but he was getting the right separation to make the catches.
Yeah, he's not as fast as he kind of looks, but I think he's faster than Alshon, though.
He's smooth.
Yes.
He's smooth. Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, the one thing, I'm 40, I've seen a whole lot of football. You got guys that weren't specifically fast, but they had great technique.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing about, like, I don't care if he's undrafted, I don't care if he's the first round pick. The thing that is right in my mind right now, Adam Thielen, undrafted, Stephon Diggs was fifth round.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't give a damn where you were drafted at. So even if Quez Watkins, these guys were drafted late, if your guys can pick out talent, I don't understand why. And I can't just blame, it's not Doug Peterson, it's not Howie Roseman, this has been a 20-plus year situation. Why the same position groups, they are just horrific with getting talent at these places. And again, the linebackers, their second-round linebacker selections have been trash. Stuart Bradley was probably the best one.
Oh, he was going to be a player before he tore his ACL.
Kendricks gave you adequate play. You would die for Michael Kendricks right now.
The guy started, he was fine. Well, he's 31 now, but yeah.
I mean, let's go back. When they won the Super Bowl, they had Kendricks filling in as a third. Well, he was the third linebacker in base. And then when, who got hurt? Oh, Hicks. Mm-hmm. Hicks got hurt. He filled in. And Hicks was a third round pick.
He had that one monster year. Monster year.
Right.
That's why he got paid $10 million a year.
That's right. Whenever he was healthy, he played well for the Eagles. Now, his first five games were kind of like, almost like, remember Kiko Alonso's first half of the year in his rookie year with Buffalo, and then after that he was like
the picks, yeah, the interceptions,
good, yeah,
and sacks,
so it was a little bit inflated. But he was a good linebacker. You could win games with him as your linebacker. He wasn't going to be out of place all the time. That's a second round pick and a third round pick. And a Nigel Bradham was a good free agent.
But
signing.
It wouldn't be nice to find a guy that maybe you are higher on than the other team that they stall in the fifth round? Okay, like George Kittle. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fifth round pick. He's the best tight end in the NFL, and he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. Okay?
Right.
Not that you need someone at that level, but how about stealing somebody? Because not everyone has the same grade. You and I are at the combine together. Okay? You and I were having a couple brews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? At the Marriott there. And we were in a conversation with a couple. It was really, really cool night. There's a bar there in the Marriott. They redid the Marriott there in downtown Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was one night where it was really very few media people. And it was just Jeff and I with around probably 8 to 10 teams. And it's really interesting the variance of grades on J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I thought for sure there'd be no teams that had anywhere close to second-round pick. There was an AFC team that we were talking to, we can't say the team, that had a low second, like high third, low second on
right,
it.
Right, I remember, low two, high three. Yeah.
I was shocked. I was like, okay, well, maybe I'm wrong on this.
Mm-hmm.
Then we saw a team that had a very low draft pick, somewhere between 6th and 7th round.
Yes.
So, and the Eagles, I assume he had a two, but sometimes you take a guy a little bit higher than you had him because you love the player and you want to make sure, like, the Eagles could go back and look at Russell Wilson and say, you know what? We thought no one else would get him and they should have taken him and just stuck by their guns and said, you know what? Forget what our grade is. We want this player, take him now.
Right.
It just so happened with Arcega-Whiteside to this point. They've been wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to linebacker, it's not so much taking them in a second or third round. How about getting the ones you draft right?
That would help.
That's the issue. It's their evaluations, how they're coached, and you talked about input. Schwartz could have input. Every coach should have. I mean, they're watching the player because you have to know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it's the front office's decision.
It should be, right.
It is.
Right.
I mean, you listen to your coaches, but they have to look at, I know this, we're going to get more into the draft and the roster construction in the offseason, but I do want, because we're getting 1,000 questions. I mean, everywhere we go, we're getting questions on this. But they have to look at linebackers. It's so bad. It's at a crisis right now. How did it become so bad?
Jatavis Brown, right? A guy they signed they thought could play a little bit, retires.
Yeah.
They draft a guy in the third round. I think they, well, I don't want to say they. I mean, is it fair to say that maybe Howie, who picked the, made the pick, overestimated how long it would take for Davion Taylor to get on the field?
All right.
That you're right that they were looking down the road like you should with every draft pick, but as I always say, doesn't make year one and year two a freebie.
Yeah, I know. You've been, that's a great point. But the other part about that, about Taylor, is because it was a COVID offseason, they knew in April, late April, early May, that there was a realistic possibility there would be no, in fact, we pretty much knew there would be no rookie minicamp and there would be no OTAs. So you're cutting down 200 to 300 snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that he's a four-year player. I mean, I get that you're drafting a player for more than 1 year. It's for 4 years, not one.
Mm-hmm.
But 25% of his career with you, potentially, you're throwing out the door. So knowing that he was, they knew that they had to know. Because every team you and I talked to said the same thing. He wasn't going to play year one. And that's held up so far.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that, where was plan B for linebacker this season?
Right, think about it. You knew you weren't going to pay Kamu Grugier-Hill the money that the Dolphins were willing to pay him. But Kamu,
they didn't make an offer to bring him back, I don't think.
Right, but Kamu was a functional linebacker for them. He made plays for them. He wasn't great. He wasn't going to make the Pro Bowl. But you weren't going to go through a game or a three-game sequence and say, oh, my God, quarterbacks completed 18 of 18 passes against him. He was good enough in your defense to be able to hold the fort down, right?
Not and the L.J. Fort.
That's another one. You asked how we got there. You had L.J. Fort. You wanted the comp pick. You released L.J. Fort.
But that's, it's such, it, you know, it's, I've been so ingrained through the Andy Reid and Joe Banner years to basically dismiss linebacker.
Right.
I know Joe doesn't like that. Joe's point when I asked him was that it was, if you graded the value board for your roster, linebacker was way down the list.
Mm-hmm.
But on your point, it doesn't mean you have to have below average linebackers.
Right.
Especially today when offenses have such an advantage. And why do they, see, the thing that maddens me with this is, like, they could develop Greg Ward, who we know doesn't run very fast, but the guy gets open repeatedly in short area.
Yeah,
that's what he does.
Reliable hands.
He's great at getting open. And within 5 to 7 yards, he's great.
Yeah.
I think playing quarterback. So, but yet, how many times did they cut this guy? That's the problem. Where is the communication in your, why did this happen? Why did you cut him so many times? So, to the point you had to sign him off your practice card because you had nobody else.
It's fair. These are fair questions. Well, we obviously get into a lot of this stuff when the season's over about what's going on. Where's the disconnect? Who's making the calls on all of
this? We're talking about this now because this is they're 1-3-1.
And there's no,
you got to talk about it.
And there's not a lot of a savior. If it's one thing, if you could see a light at the end of the tunnel with some of these defensive issues. And like I said, you saw it with offense, but it's harder to see with defense because teams are going right after it and they're having a lot of success doing it. 610-632-0975. Let's get Pat and Bluebell up here on Inside the Birds Radio. What's going on, Pat?
Hey, man. I think we can all agree that the Eagles have issues selecting players. My question to you is, what do we do? Do we search and seek out player personnel pickers?
No. It's their process is flawed, okay? I'm going to tell you exactly. I'm going to give you a little bit of a hint, okay? They have, Andy Weidel is really good. They're a personnel director. The college director, you know, they have, Anthony Patch is the college director. Is that correct?
Anthony Patch is their senior director of college scouting.
They're really good at their job. It's the process of how you pick the players. Are you a... Let me give you an example.
Real quick, though. That's not our opinion, by the way. These guys are highly respected around
the
league.
That's, I wouldn't know. I don't work there.
Where our statement comes from.
This is where people, like Andy Waddle's really good. It's, if you're Howie Roseman, are you listening? If you are you going by your board? Because at 16, I could tell you as an absolute fact for people in the room, Howie was flawless. He let Tom Donahoe set the board. And he ran it like a champ. And obviously, you know the brilliant job he did with Wentz.
Right. And he didn't have Joe Douglas at that time.
No, Joe came in after that draft.
Relying on coaches for input.
What has happened since 16?
Tom to stack the board, right?
17 was atrocious. Mm-hmm. What's happened?
Yeah, 17 was atrocious. So you're saying the people in the organization are in place. It's on Howie Rose.
Howie's got to follow the process.
Thanks for calling, Pat.
Great question. If they set the board, go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Arthego Whiteside is an analytics pick. Okay, that's what he is. He's got now.
Davion Taylor too.
Yeah. Now, if you Greg Cosell was on our show.
Mm-hmm.
He said he talked to people. He was on our pregame. He's on our pregame show every week.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg said he talked to people at Stanford, And they said he got better with certain parts of his game before he left. But you could see with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, he's not explosive at all. I don't care what his 40 time is.
Right.
His 10, which is unbelievably important, is not explosive.
I remind people of this all the time. Jordan Matthews somehow ran a very good 40 at Vanderbilt at his pro day. I think it was like 4.4 or something crazy like that.
You're correct.
And,
yes,
he's 6'3", right?
Right.
So for that kind of guy to run a 4.4 is incredible. But he's not an explosive outside receiver.
Why do you think Chip Kelly, rightfully so, in 13... move him to the slot.
Yeah.
Because he knew exactly what it was. The tape showed
it. He said, you are a slot receiver. Right.
The tape showed it. And it's not, that's why it's about, and I'm a big analytics believer. There's a certain way you can use analytics. We need to have Joe Banner on our show here. We're going to have Joe on soon. Because I want him to explain it. We've had him on Inside the Birds. See, Joe's done a great job for us when we've had him on. But I want him to explain how the Eagles have changed the way that he used analytics. They don't do it the same way he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something going on here with these missed draft picks? And I can't put my finger on it, and I need to do more research. But there's no way they should be missing like this on certain positions.
This always leads into my favorite question from fans, Adam, is, you know, because fans are always like, always want to go the fire this guy, fire that guy. And I say, okay, all right. If
the favorite thing in this town. Fire everybody.
Inevitably, if this gets worse, you're going to hear louder. Right now, it's fire Jim Schwartz, and then next week it'll be fire Doug Peterson. But inevitably, that'll turn to fire Howie Roseman, right? This caller, Pat, was just basically questioning Howie Roseman's competence. But I always present to you, the fan, this. Think about this. Who's the person that hired Howie Roseman?
Joe Banner,
right. But who's been presiding over the organization to the point where Howie has been elevated to this level?
Jeffrey Lurie.
Right. So if Jeffrey Lurie were to fire Howie Roseman, what kind of person do you think Jeffrey Lurie would look to replace Howie Roseman?
Analytics person.
That is a great answer and my point. You can call for all the firings. And let me just expand this because we have a few minutes left. This city has become very accustomed to saying, fire X, fire Matt Klentak, fire Brett Brown, fire Jim Schwartz, fire Gabe Kapler, next year it'll be fire Doc Rivers if he doesn't get past the second round, and it'll be fire Joe Girardi, right? It's fire, fire, fire. But the people who say that don't ask themselves, well, who are going to replace? Who are you going to hire? Who is doing the hiring? Right? It's not always about who you're firing. It's about the people doing the hiring. And if you, as a fan of this city, find yourself constantly saying, fire this guy from this team, fire that guy from that team, fire, and all
they just want
teams,
him out. Fans just want him out.
It'll
I
be
get
fire
it.
Chuck Fletcher if the Flyers aren't better next year, right? It'll be fire Alain Vigneault.
But
you got to ask yourself, who do you what problem are you solving by firing?
But I want to ask this question. Okay.
You got to hire the right people.
Before we get out of here, I agree with you. You absolutely.
And that
very
means
important.
The people who do the hiring have to be competent.
Jeffrey Lurie's got to do this. Because he has influence on the draft. Okay. I mean, you and I have reported on this. This is not, I'm going to address it.
Yeah.
He's had influence on this. He's had, I don't know exactly how, but I know he's had.
Correct.
He's got to look at it and say, what are we doing here? Starting at 17, 18 looks very promising, though.
Mm-hmm.
17, very bad. By far, one of the worst drafts they've had in the last 20 years. Why did it happen? Okay. 19, very mixed. 19, very mixed. I mean, it doesn't also, actually, quite frankly, it doesn't look very good.
Mm-hmm.
Not 20, it's way too early. But why have they not aced? You're not getting every pick right, but why can't you get two or three right?
Mm-hmm.
And feel good about, hey, you got two or three starters out of this draft.
Right. You have to examine your process.
Right. And it's the process. I just, there's something missing here.
But I feel like that starts with whether it's John Middleton or whether it's Jeffrey Lurie, right? Or whether it's the
and I'm not saying Jeffrey's
Harris
not making
Blitzer.
The picks. He's not making the picks. Howie is.
Right.
But whatever analytics influence he wants, I don't know that it's working.
Right. I think everybody has to look at themselves in the mirror and say, is my process working? I totally agree with you. I think it's a very fair statement. And it's not just about one guy. You're right. It's about everybody and examining what they're doing and why it's not happening the way they want it to.
That's
as simple as that.
Yeah.
All right. Make sure you're listening to Inside the Birds on every podcast platform you've got. Make sure you're checking out InsideTheBirds.com. Check out Tales from the Blind Side also coming out on tomorrow, I believe, and then Grilling the Birds on Thursday. And hit us up on Twitter, at Jeff Mosher NFL, at Kaplan NFL. We'll be back with you next week. Monday night, 6 to 8 p.m. as we recap whatever happens in that Eagles-Ravens game. Everybody enjoy the rest of your week and stay tuned for Devon Givens. He's up next on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.